men have named you.
That's the thing, like, I've had that fucking stuck in my head.
It's a great tune.
Since last night, like, Claire and I lay in bed watching the movie, and then all day while I was making coffees at work, I'm like, Mona Lisa! But that's, like, the only fucking lyric.
No, but it's fun to sing, and yeah. I've been doing the same thing.
Fucking Nat King Cole, man.
Yeah, it's super tasty.
Yeah.
Mona Lisa! Yeah, it's fucking delicious.
Welcome to the Criterion Quest, a continuing podcast series looking at important classics and contemporary films. My name is Chris, and I am joined, as I am every single goddamn week, by my wonderful co-host Tom.
Hello.
And we just finished watching Neil Jordan's 1986 film, Mona Lisa.
Starring Bob Hoskins.
Yes, and
Hagrid.
Robbie Coltrane, Michael Caine, Kathy Tyson.
It's a really good cast.
And a really good film.
I know, it is. It really is.
I'd never seen this before. Mm. I'm assuming you hadn't either.
I haven't, no.
Before we kind of jump into it, I guess we should probably start with the plot synopsis.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do the real quick one. It's about a man named George who is released from prison. We find out as the film goes on that he was a driver or getaway sort of driver, for some criminal type peoples.
Yeah.
He ends up getting a job working for sort of his former employers and former crime partners, where his job is he drives around a prostitute at night, a kind of high class prostitute, to her different clients throughout the evening, and he kind of acts as her bodyguard slash driver, and, you know, not her pimp, but kind of her handler, if you will. And as the two of them kind of progress a friendship, she reveals that she has a young friend who is also a prostitute that she's lost, and she wants Bob Hoskins or George to track her down for her.
Mm.
That's the, like, real brief.
Yeah, it's good. No, but that's it.
Yeah. There's a whole lot of other shit going on in the movie, but yeah, that's the main beats, I guess.
And how do you want to... How do you want to...
Well, I was intrigued off the bat. Like, do you know Neil Jordan as a filmmaker? Have you seen any of his...
Well, I don't know. Can you explain his past?
I'll just reel off some of his films. Obviously, a British director. The Company of Wolves. Then he did Mona Lisa. Then The Crying Game, which is a fucking fantastic film with one of the most spoiled twist endings in cinema history.
What's that ending?
Spoiler alert, she has a dick. And then Interview with the Vampire was his as well.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Then he did some I kind of like his smaller, more interesting films, like The Good Thief with Nick Nolte is a really good movie. Recently he did The Brave One with Jodie Foster, kind of all over the map of a filmmaker, but
so you're saying this is his second film?
Third or fourth.
Okay.
It's
quite polished.
Yeah, and I find with his films, they are kind of very story-driven pieces, but he doesn't necessarily focus on the story, he focuses on the characters within that story.
I feel like it's a blurry, a grey area where it's kind of seamless. The narration is driven by character motivations and character decisions, but it becomes like quite hard to pinpoint, is the story broader than just the characters? Is the environment forcing people to make decisions, or is it really just the characters?
The character piece, yeah. Because that's the thing, like, Mona Lisa, like, as I was, like, doing the plot synopsis, there's a lot going on in this film plot-wise. I mean, there's, you know, the double crossings of ex-partners, and, like, you know, the finding of the underage prostitute. Like, so much is actually going on in terms of a narrative, but it is the characters that drive the story 100%, and if I had to describe this film, I would say it is a 100% character piece film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Mm.
George's character arc is so fucking deep and subtle and nuanced and
fucking phenomenal, and is one of the best performances I've seen in any film in a very long time. Like, regardless of old film, new film, Bob Hoskins' performance in this film is beyond. It is phenomenal. And when the movie ended, I sort of leaned over to Claire and was like, he played Super Mario.
I was thinking that as well, like whole fucking time.
You know, Shmee and Hook. Like, people of our generation predominantly know him for his...
Silly roles.
Whereas, like, you know, we've gotten to see him in Long Good Friday and with this, and you're like... that motherfucker was an actor.
And he has some chops. Like, he is, he has some diverse skills.
Mm.
Damn it.
Do we want to kind of continue on the route of, I mean, we usually do themes and narrative and stuff first, but, like, since we're on the character train, do we want to keep that one going and discussing the actors and the characters before we kind
let's,
of jump?
Yeah, no, let's take George.
Yeah.
So he, initially, he set up as kind of a bumbling, it's like a buffoon, kind of.
It's kind of interesting. The first scene we get with him is obviously, like, you know, the morning he's released from prison, he's walking, he's got his big yellow envelope that is his personal effects, and he stops to buy some flowers, and he's going to visit his, you know, you assume he's going to go visit his girlfriend or his ex-wife, but then you find out it's all about he just wants to see his daughter, and it adds in that right away you're like, oh, okay, you've added this nice sympathetic arc to this character. Like, I want to know more about this man, and the kind of explosion of emotion that happens in that fucking right at the beginning.
There's enough information there to feel frustrated with him.
Yes, frustrated, but also kind of sympathetic. Like, you feel for him, which is...
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah. For having a character that has such a violent outburst, throwing trash cans all over the place, to then...
Yeah, exactly.
At the end of that scene, to feel sorry for that person is...
But very early on in the film, you get the sense that the man is constantly trying to understand his situation and better himself.
Heart of gold character.
So even though, like, so it's almost like his anger gets the better of him, like it does most people.
Yes.
And you're like, oh man, we've all been there.
And it's kind of interesting, the choice of words you use, like the whole idea of understanding, because that's kind of what the whole film is about. It's about a man struggling to understand a woman, like a woman's perspective, like that.
Yeah.
The elements that are going on, like with the prostitutes. Like, he just can't fathom that, and he's trying his hardest to understand what is going on. And so it is just a bumbling buffoon of a man. Well, that's harsh. He's a gruff man who's trying to understand.
And from early on, I get the sense that because he's caring for, I mean, obviously he's caring for her early on.
Yeah.
And it's developing into some kind of love.
Yeah. And
a deep sense of love, but he's trying to do the right thing by her and by him, by his daughter and stuff like that.
But also by his employer.
Yeah.
At the same time, like, when Mortwell, Michael Caine's character, asks him, find out what she does, find out what Simone does with her clients, he could lie and make up, like, you know, no, to kind of keep the trust he's kind of building with Simone.
Mm.
But no, he's like, no, I'll do what I'm, you know...
He's riding the line between doing his job well, staying friends with everybody,
yes,
not upsetting anybody.
He wants to maintain the status quo, pretty much,
But it's difficult to do.
Yeah.
But here is one thing that I picked up, that actually Cole was watching with me, she picked up on it first. The idea that you're watching George's character arc from being a criminal to being a respectable man to... falling back into the criminal ways again, being the aggressor in situations. And his character arc, his personality, often is attached to what he's wearing. Throughout the whole film?
Yeah.
You know, there's the idea that that he's trying to pull away from his the criminal world for the sake of his daughter.
Yep.
And so, you know, let's redress. Let's do the casual job, driving around a prostitute, even though it's kind of shaky.
It's not against the law. Yeah.
So, well, in that country.
Yeah.
In other places it is, but...
Yeah.
in that country, it's not against the law.
Yeah.
So let's dress up. Let's dress up and be a respectable person within the society.
But that's also to fit in with the type of job that he is doing and the type of places Simone is...
Mm-hmm.
Her clients are. Like, he needs to... blend in with the upper class as well, but it also reflects the character of, like, the evolution that he's taking.
And then when it starts to turn kind of shaky?
Yes, when he starts the search for Kathy.
When he starts and kind of anger starts to get the better of him, and naturally so, because you're dealing with pimps that are beating up women and all this sort of shit.
And they're underage girls.
The personality, the piece of pie that is his personality that is drenched in like, the old ways, the criminal ways, is like, let me out, and I can deal with this fucking situation. And I loved how, you know, there was that crazy, that strange Hawaiian jazzy t-shirt yes, that he was wearing.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, you know, at the start is very much a part of him just going like, what? This is well, what like, I, yeah, I, goes,
when,
what
gives,
I like
when Simone gives him money to go buy the clothes, that's...
This is some fucking jazzy clothes.
This is the expression of who he is at that point as a character. Yeah. Yeah.
And he changes, he moves away from that personality into this new entity.
Ooh, nice.
And then, yeah, and then I like that as the old ways go, he falls back to the old ways, his old clothing starts to become... So he starts to wear that more.
Yeah.
And so I like that there's these visual cues going through the film of where he's at mentally, visually speaking.
Yeah, yeah. And that nice also touch. Kind of wraps up again with, like, as you were saying, like, the evolution of the character going from, you know, respectable man back down to more criminal. I feel like it does at the end, like, with that final scene, we do get respectable man again, but humble respectable man.
Yes.
With the mechanic.
With the mechanic's
that,
question.
That is
yeah.
very important because... When we had the giant finale happening at Brighton Rock, I, like, 100% understood where the violence and the aggression, and, like, you know, where we were going with this storyline, and it was not a happy ending, per se. And then by just having that one 30-second scene at the end, just uplifted me so fucking much.
It was very beautiful.
It was beautiful. In a film that had a very dark last 20 minutes, mm. it just... And there's hardly any dialogue in the scene as well.
But you don't need... I mean, that's what I mean. Like, the visual cues are there. The
yes.
suit... This what he's wearing says it all.
Yeah.
It's him meeting his daughter, having worked a day with Hagrid.
Yes.
Cleaning... like, fixing cars. And you're like, dude, you're completely out of the criminal world now. Well
yeah.
done.
And then having him walk... to go for a stroll with his daughter. You're like, fuck yes, I love you, George. Like, he is such a wonderful character. He really is.
We've, like, jumped right to the end.
I know, but it worked, because we're following the arc of George.
Yeah.
While I remember it, I want to bring up the use of the books, the crime books that are... Bob Hoskins and Robbie Coltrane's characters both love.
Mm-hmm.
And are constantly kind of discussing the narratives and kind of... The clever way that Neil Jordan is able to kind of weave that in to help not necessarily the audience along, because it's a fairly straightforward narrative, but it's helping...
Well, it's giving you the audience a bit of insight into the characters, further
yeah,
insight.
But it's also a nice kind of way... George is telling what he's doing with Simone as the driver and things, and the kind of seedy story that he is going into. He's explaining to Robbie Coltrane as if it were a book he was writing.
Yeah.
And I think it works well as, like, A, to help, you know, not necessarily help, but, like, aid the audience with what is going on within our narrative, but it's also helping George understand what and why he's doing what
yeah,
he's doing.
Yeah, it's like a moment of reflection.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, and it kind of helps keep him in check.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, it's like a nice way of doing, it's not exposition, but it's like, imagine if we were watching Coup de Torchon, and there was this kind of thing in it.
Yeah.
Where you get an insight into the character, but it's not, isn't like, thrown in your face going, like, this is what I'm thinking now.
Yes, yeah. If it was nice and subtle in there.
Yeah. Yeah. So that shit is just, like, one of the many pretty things in this film. Like,
yeah.
It is, on the surface, quite a brutal movie.
It's seedy.
Yeah, it is. It's good. That's a good word for it, yeah.
The film, like, obviously, I mean, I think it got compared to a lot when it first came out, I think it's just the similarities, because it has a lot of driving and the prostitution aspect, but it's similar to Taxi Driver,
mm-hmm.
but it's a more upbeat Taxi Driver, I feel. Like, Taxi Driver is very nihilistic and ends on a very dark comedy note,
yeah.
whereas this actually is genuine hope.
Yes.
And happiness at the end.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And not like, I go crazy and murder pimps and try
yeah.
and assassinate a presidential candidate.
Well, yeah, fucking oath. I mean, because if you've got to watch a film where you're watching 15-year-olds prostituting themselves and getting beat up, it's nice to know that there's, like, little smatterings of pleasantness
yeah.
throughout the film, and it allows... The film does that fucking really well.
I couldn't help but wonder, like, the... With the finale, like, you know, George obviously escaping from this life finally after he frees Kathy and Simone and is, you know, Mortwell and Anderson, the two pimps, are kind of dealt with. It's very clearly an escape, I guess. Like, but it was that kind of niggling thing in the back of my mind, like, oh, fuck, I wonder if he ever went back for that young Irish girl. Like, that's, you know how there was when he first starts his quest for Kathy,
yeah,
and he comes across another young
girl,
the Irish girl.
Yes.
That, I understand, like, why that was in the film. Obviously, from a narrative standpoint, it helps helps him sympathize with the cause of wanting to find the real Kathy, especially with having a girl who's the same age as his daughter, and, like, it adds in all those elements. But there's no resolution to that storyline.
But then there's no resolution to any, like, pretty much 99% of the prostitutes that you'll see on the screen.
Which, yeah, yeah.
So it's like... And he genuinely tried to help that woman.
I know,
as well,
I know,
by the
but
way.
That's, yeah, the kind of...
He offered her ice cream, which I thought, by the way, is a really nice touch, where there's the constant reminder of...
They are...
Young girls. Yes. I want ice cream, and they're singing children's...
children's Michael Finnegan's rhymes. Song. Oh my God.
You know...
That was a creepy scene.
They are... Yeah, it's a really nice touch, and it's kind of really humanizes... the situation.
Yeah.
Humanizes, like, for me, I'm listening, I'm like going, oh yeah, if you're singing that song, it's one thing being told that the girl's 15, but it's another thing hearing a 15-year-old singing children's songs
while whacked out on heroin and
yeah,
wanting
and you're like,
and
god damn man, what, your what? Situation is fucking sucks.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, going back to the girl, she was very much like, I want ice cream, and then she bails. So it's Bob Hoskins, George did try.
Yeah, yeah.
And she left him, so it's... I mean, he was pretty ready.
There's only so much he can do.
He was even ready to fork out cash for the chance to help her.
Yeah.
So I feel like, you know, he did his best. It's not like...
Can we jump onto tone for a second? This film, to me, like, obviously, you know, with The Crying Game and Interview with the Vampire in particular, like, Neil Jordan is very good at setting tone for not just films but individual scenes. And I found in particular, like, right towards the beginning, it was like one of the first evenings when George is driving Simone around and they go to King's Cross. And I don't know, it just, the way that he shot it and the sound design as well used in the scene, just a sense of dread started to kind of build within me. And it's the scene that escalates with the other pimp coming in and recognizing Simone and Bob Hoskins getting in
scratching
there.
Scratching his face and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But just as that scene, like, there is nothing in that scene that really should suggest something bad is going to happen. But it's just the way in which he sets up his shots and just the general vibe of those scenes filled me with a sense of dread. And it's also the similar effect with any scene Michael Caine was in.
Yes, yeah.
There's nothing overt in the filmmaking that should do that to you, but for some reason does.
Well, what is it about those scenes? Because I can definitely say that Michael Caine, his character gives you that tone.
Yeah,
just the portrayal of that guy is dreadful.
I think it is
in the sense that you're talking about.
I think it's honestly Bob Hoskins' performance. Like, in both of those scenes in particular, he just has a sense, like, a kind of look on his face, like, I'm in over my head.
Yeah,
and you. Therefore, because he's your link with this film, you as the audience are in over your head and you don't know what the fuck is going on and what to expect.
That and also, if you're talking about... Are you talking about that sequence where Michael Caine is expressing, like, oh, it's my birthday today?
Yes, yes. Yeah. And that giant walk through his strip club. And
the camera's always very low to the ground looking up at that Caine.
And then it ends with him sitting in that ginormous hand that is
So he's got, like, it's always an overpowering figure.
Yeah.
That's just too... There's too much authority for George and us to ever be like, we can't get on top of this fellow.
Well, I suppose that could also be the same in the King's Cross scenes, because, I mean, obviously, on a very literal level, both George and Simone are seated in the car and things, so all the outside characters lingering in are standing over them, but that's... You know.
But it's an impressive atmosphere in general, just because of the location.
Whenever they visit King's Cross, it's always raining.
Yeah, I like that.
For no reason. In the scene that's the exact same night previous, it's not raining.
Yeah.
But then... As soon as we get to King's Cross, everything is wet and dirty and
gunky. Well, you need those lights to reflect off the road, man.
It's that, but it's also that, like, unbelievable element of, like, no, we're in the fucking bowels of hell.
it's somewhere else. It's not. Yeah, it's another realm.
Yeah, it's otherworldly at that point. God damn, this movie is fucking phenomenal. I really, really loved it.
There was these kind of little flourishes I really enjoyed. In particular, I want to talk about. There's a sequence. There's a sequence where George first initially tries to locate Kathy.
Kathy, yeah.
And he goes into the peep shows, traipsing around. Like, it's really
the Phil Collins scene.
Is that a Phil Collins song?
It's a Genesis song. Yeah.
Okay, good. I wanted to figure out what it was because I thought that it was such an interesting choice, a song to put in a sequence.
Written specifically for this film.
Really?
And then went on to be on one of Genesis's early albums and became like a huge smash hit film, smash hit song for them.
Holy shit. Because it doesn't suit... It's
no.
It's a counterpoint to the scene itself. And we're talking about... Play. You gotta should play the music right now. This much you promised. How could I ever forget? Listen, you know I love you, but I just can't take this. You know I love you, but I'm playing for keeps. Although I need you, I'm not gonna need this. You know I want to, but I'm in. So it's a love ballad.
Yeah.
You know, it's a love song. Searching for like an intimate partner or something like that.
Yeah.
And the juxtaposition of George searching for, going into these seedy fucking pits where you're finding like, you know, they're working girls, but it's still a seedy weird kind of
it's not a pleasant place to go on an adventure.
And I thought just that sequence in general, the choice of tune with the visuals, with the situation in general, super disturbing but wonderful.
And
really, really interesting.
It's never exactly shot in a oppressive or dark manner. It's using, like, obviously the girls are wearing bright clothes, there's lots of neon lights, and it's not... the places he's entering, they're never darkly lit. It is, you know, it's not like he's using the filmic elements to express the emotion and the... like, not the emotion, the tone and the seediness of where he's going. It's just, you as an audience understand, like, at this point in the story... he's not needing to show you that. And so that's, again, it kind of works with that song as well. It's kind of almost, you know, I'm not going to say it's upbeat. the colour palettes and things of what he's witnessing, but it's not exactly dark.
No, but there is like a...
I'm talking on a strictly visual plateau here. Not, like, definitely, the places he's going are dark and fucked up, but visually they're not.
But you're constantly thinking, you know, what is this? Where is this woman, this young Kathy, and what is the state of her right now?
Yeah.
And you're listening to a love ballad.
Yes.
Just the shit that was happening in my brain at that point is fucking crazy. But then, and you're largely like kind of confronting, right?
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, I think the fact that it's a love ballad works because the fact that George is actually going on this quest to find Kathy for Simone
is the thing.
An expression of his. Love
yes.
For her.
So the song, the love ballad, is really directed. It's George's point of view directed towards Simone.
Yes.
As he's hunting for Simone's affection.
Yes.
Objective affection.
Which is Kathy.
Just fascinating sequence in a film.
Yes.
So many things had to align for that sequence to just work the way it did.
Yeah.
Furthermore, there was this one interaction which I thought was really cool. Was when he goes to the barmaid at one of the pits of hell, and asks, have you seen, you know, a blonde girl? I'm looking for a blonde girl, and the barmaid just takes off her red-haired wig to present her blonde hair, and I thought that was such a wonderfully subtle way of saying that your job finding this young woman is way harder than you ever think.
Yeah, you just gone for a stroll. To all these kind of seedy places, you know, like have you seen a young girl? It's like there are thousands of young. This is London. Like there's a huge.
Like, but it's foreshadowing the moment where he meets the Irish woman and she pretends to be Kathy.
Yes,
because the nature of the business is I'll be whatever you want.
Exactly. Right? Yeah.
So how are you supposed to find somebody when everybody is so dishonest?
Yeah.
You know, how are you supposed to pinpoint the location of a blonde girl with a tattoo when? Everyone is ready to be a blonde girl with a tattoo for money.
Yes.
So I thought, like, these kinds of little ideas that have been pushed into put into the film is just makes this film just so fucking wonderful.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting. I hadn't really thought about it until you just said it just then. Like, the whole idea of the prostitutes, like, their main thing is they will be whatever you want them to be.
Mm.
To a lesser extent, that's also the same with George, like in his profession. He comes out of prison, he's like, I'll do what you want me to do.
Yeah, but that is his arc, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because he is like that until he's not at the end.
Yes.
He's like, I'm going to be what I want to be.
And by doing that as well, like it's... he achieves that by also giving the girls that opportunity.
Yeah.
Like, not giving the girls, but helping them facilitate.
I think that's the fundamental crux of the film, right?
I assume so, yeah.
Like that is the,
and it's also,
the evolution of his character and the triumph of his character.
Yeah, and it's the idea of slow, like, the realization that he comes to of not being able to understand and coming to a realization and, for lack of a better term, an understanding of being not able to understand the girl's perspective and being okay with that in the end and just accepting it and moving on.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And love.
And love as well. Love's important.
Yeah.
Well, we haven't really talked about Simone.
Yeah.
Or Kathy.
Yeah. Simone is an incredibly strong female character, I think.
She was really... The way that she portrayed a high-class prostitute was really interesting. She always looked kind of monotone.
Yeah.
Which gave a seriousness to her character. But it was like... trying to formulate that. I'm having this thought about the monotone stuff. Do you agree that she's very monotonous at times?
Yeah.
Like her personality,
but I think that's in her downtime, if for lack of a better.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's when she, in between clients, when she's waiting to be told or given an idea of who she's supposed to be, then she will be that person. But in the downtime, she's kind of almost like powers down and is very soft-spoken and monotone. And
yeah. She presented a kind of mystery.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when she's going down King's Cross, I think by the third time, I'm like, what's going on here? I don't understand.
Yeah, Claire throughout, like, she thought she was looking for a sister, possibly, but then, you know, ends up being
Cole thought that maybe she was reminding herself of where she'd come from.
That's an interesting one, yeah.
Which I thought was like just as good a reason to come down there as any, but I don't know. Like, what's?
Fuck, I had something, but. But I mean, as predominant as Simone is in the film, it's not her film though. She's in it a fair amount, and she is a main kind of crux and driving force behind the narrative, but...
She's almost the MacGuffin.
Yes, that's it, exactly, yeah.
She's just driving George's arc,
yes,
his motivations.
That's it, and, like, the whole idea of, you know, the King's Cross and the Adder, that's it, the mystery you were talking about just before. Those little elements, I think, they add nicely to create the kind of noir mystery elements that are similar to the books George reads, that it kind of has this giant arc that kind of continues through and kind of that we've had set up with the idea that, you know, Robbie Coltrane sends him these mystery novels that he read while he was in prison, and that's kind of, you know, his guilty pleasure, I guess, and now he finds himself smack bang in the middle of it thanks to this girl, and the fact that she is tall, dark and mysterious, kind of, you know, it just ticks all these kind of mystery film elements. So
here's something that I want to figure out. I want to know why it's called Mona Lisa, because we've talked quite a bit about George.
Yep.
And the film in general, but I want to know why call it Mona Lisa, because the song speaks of a Mona Lisa that is a man trying to figure out why Mona Lisa is the way she is, talking about the portrait, obviously.
Yep.
And what is her drive? I mean, it's supposed to... Is it supposed to mirror George's frustration in trying to understand what women want? Because the song is constantly asking, you know, what do you want, Mona Lisa? Like, are you sitting there teasing me, or are you, you know, this, that, and whatever?
Mm. Well, I mean, obviously, like, you know, the use of the Nat King Cole song is very prevalent. It's like whenever George is driving, and it's like over the opening credits, it's a constant thing in the film. So, I mean, you know, you could have the base thing of like, yeah, the film is titled after the song that is used in the film. But then you also have the little elements like Robbie Coltrane having a picture of the Mona Lisa up in his apartment and things. There's all these little kind of niggling elements. And I was trying to think of like a good answer for this while watching the movie. And I guess like the one I kind of came to, I mean, it could be utter bullshit or whatever, but it is.
Yeah, but let's still.
The Mona Lisa herself, like the woman in that painting, is not necessarily attractive. Yet, people look at that painting and see utter beauty. So, you could view it as George is seeing something that is not beautiful, the world of prostitution, and finding something to take away from that, I guess.
Well, no, but, yeah. I think
that was my clutching.
The Mona Lisa is interesting because of the perplexity of her expression.
Yeah.
It's confusing. That's not really the right word. It's perplexing.
Yeah.
Like she will smile at you no matter where you are in the room.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. So people think about it like it's all a very romantic sense.
Yeah.
But you will think about what Mona Lisa
what she's
doing, what she's thinking about.
Well, that again, I guess, falls back into the whole idea of like trying to understand the motivations of a woman.
So I think, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So in this sense, maybe the Mona Lisa is the symbol for all women.
Yes.
And George's quest is the same as Nat King Cole's quest.
Yeah.
To understand Mona Lisa, to understand women.
Yes. Yeah, that. I mean, I think that's it. Like, Neil, I've got some quotes, actually. The essay that comes in the Criterion booklet, it's not really an essay, it's more two paragraph, it's a really short little thing. But it's actually written by Neil Jordan himself.
Okay.
And he talks about how, you know, he was brought this story his producer kind of found this interesting story about, like, guys driving the prostitutes and, you know, that whole kind of world. And he was like, cool, but I want to make a film about this. And it's about men's total lack of understanding of women. And, like, the need and drive for that. Like, yeah.
And then it's interesting.
And he melded the two together.
Thinking on this, it's interesting that Simone's affection is a woman.
Yeah. Ooh, shit. I hadn't even...
It's such an interesting idea that the whole film is about a man trying to understand a woman, but that very woman is already in the throes of understanding...
Of also trying, yeah.
Yeah, like, the both people are seeking to understand women.
Yeah.
In a sense, in the a love sense, I suppose, or just in a general sense, I suppose. But yeah, because the lesbian element surprised me.
Yes. Yeah.
I thought that she was just genuinely like she's a friend. Kathy is a friend of
Simone's. She hadn't seen her and was so worried about it.
They both grew up in shit together, and so they had
a
bond.
Yeah, so it was just an embrace, and it wasn't.
But it's flat out like a fucking. She's my companion, man.
Yeah, no, it is a full on lesbian love. Yeah, like they are in love together. They are partners. Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm not smart enough to fully understand.
This is honestly one that could be like, you know, thesis. Like, you know,
yeah,
you could go on for this.
There's so much. The
this is what
the complexity in this film is fucking deep.
That's what I was saying. Like, with the plot synopsis, like, this is just like on its base level, this is what this is about, but it's about so much more.
So much more.
It is a fucking phenomenal film.
And I'd like to rewatch it because it's
deserves
that.
Yeah. My one and only niggling complaint with it, not enough Michael Caine. But that's my complaint about any film. Every film in the world has not enough Michael Caine.
He was rather supporting role.
Yeah. But
rather too much support.
But the fact that I think it was Michael Caine let you know how serious a character it was.
Yeah.
If it was an unknown actor, you'd be like, yeah, fine. But the fact that it was Michael Caine made it, you understand,
it goes both ways. Don't you think, like, sometimes when an actor is cast in a role, all you see is the actor, and it gets in the way of the character?
Yeah.
Sometimes, in this situation, it aids the character. The very fact that you're going, that's Michael Caine, it's not whatever his fucking name is.
Mortwell.
It's not Mortwell, it's Michael Caine playing Mortwell right now.
Yeah.
I mean, it breaks the immersion of watching a film, but it's also aiding the experience of a film.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from.
Or am I just talking shit?
No, I can kind of see where you're coming from.
I'm talking shit.
But yeah, I don't know. Like, did you have anything else? I mean, obviously, I think this is one film we could go round and round and round in circles debating these themes. But
I'm pretty happy.
We can jump onto the little bit of trivia I've got for this one.
Yeah.
So the film was nominated for 4 Golden Globes: Best Picture, Best Picture Drama, Best Supporting Actress for Kathy Tyson, who played Simone, Best Screenplay, and it won Best Actor for Bob Hoskins.
Nice.
It was also nominated for 6 BAFTAs: Best Film, Best Director, Best Screenplay, Best Actress for Kathy Tyson, and it won Best Actor for Bob Hoskins.
Awards are so important.
Yeah. It was also nominated for the 1986 Palme d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival, where it also won Best Actor for Bob Hoskins. The film also received a Special Distinction Award at the 1987 Independent Spirit Awards, and was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Actor for Bob Hoskins.
Bob Hoskins.
He did not. He won every single major acting award for this film, except the Academy Award, which went to Paul Newman for The Color of Money. It was his legacy, bullshitty legacy award win.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, okay.
Which is a bummer.
But hey, you know.
But I mean, shit.
The trophy is the film's performance in the film. Everybody gets to watch the trophy, so.
Yeah, exactly. Apparently, Neil Jordan used real prostitutes in the film for all the King's Cross scenes. They are actual, just the hookers that worked there.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the early scripting called for George to be a much older character, and Sean Connery was suggested. Although Connery admired the work of Neil Jordan and wanted to work with him, he actually disliked the role and the story of the film, so turned it down.
Because he likes to beat women, so he'd probably be on the other
end. He's like, watch for the Southern Garden.
Can I be Mr. Smith, please?
Yeah. Anthony Hopkins was actually offered the role of Mortwell, but turned it down because he felt he wasn't right for the part. In a 2007 interview, he mentioned that he told Neil Jordan to hire Michael Caine because he thought he would be absolutely perfect for the role.
It's not wrong.
Yeah. Bob Hoskins was actually unaware that Michael Caine was in the film until he arrived on set the first day of shooting. The two of them were really good friends and acted in like 7 or 8 films together.
Okay.
Caine himself had created the ruse while working together with Bob Hoskins on Sweet Liberty earlier that year. He told Hoskins that he'd been offered the part, but it was too small and he was tired of playing villains, even though he had already agreed to take the part.
Nah.
So it's just Michael Caine being a funny bugger.
Yeah.
And this one I thought was just fucking bonkers and would have ruined the movie if it happened. But at one point, Handmade Films producer Dennis O'Brien suggested that Grace Jones should play the role of Simone after he saw on a poster for A View to a Kill.
That's one way to cast.
So that, because Grace Jones, if you've seen A View to a Kill, holy shit, Grace Jones can't act. That would have ruined this film. View to a Kill is like the worst Bond movie. It's so fucking bad.
It's got Christopher. Is that a Dalton one?
No, it's Roger Moore. Walken's the bad guy, and it's got blimps. His plan is essentially Lex Luthor's plan from the Superman movie. He wants to break California away from the US. It's just real estate. It's so stupid.
Oh, yeah.
So stupid.
Yeah.
But that's you don't give a shit about Bond.
I don't like Bond.
Fucking love Bond. We'll move on to the actual Criterion edition itself. Unfortunately, the film is actually out of print and has been for a while. So if you're able to track down the one disc DVD, more power to you, because you get the following special features: an audio commentary by Neil Jordan and actor Bob Hoskins, as well as the original theatrical trailer. I built it up like you were going to get much more. No.
Good one.
No.
Good one, Chris.
Thanks, man. I liked it. Beans and crepes with jokes and japes, I'll play. But if you have any comments or queries, please send us an email at thecriterionquest@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter @CriterionQuest. Or check out the R Criterion subreddit, where I'll be posting this Tom's artwork for this week.
Yeah.
Yeah. But other than that, we will be back next week when we have another Michael Bay action extravaganza.
The Rock.
The fucking Rock.
The Cage.
Yeah. The pinnacle, the highlight of 90s action movies.
Yeah. Mm. Super exciting.
But for this week's episode, I'm Chris.
I'm Tom. See you next time.
Mona Lisa.